My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my
Oh,
soul.
is this
Welcome
legal?
back
Legal?
to the Sports Objective as we are doing our cold open. That's the way they say there's nothing like technology. Technology is great when it works. With us right now is Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, dude?
Doing well, Dave. How are you?
All right. Kyle Barber, what's up, man?
Yeah, I'm not sure Bubba's doing well by that response, but he says he is. I'm all right, guys. I hope all you are.
Matt Semenza, are you like buying Kyle his first beer in Annapolis?
Oh yeah, it's going to be a Pabst Blue Ribbon or a
First beer.
Keystone.
Oh, I
It's
thought it
over.
was good. Oh man, I'm really disappointed. I thought it was gonna be Busch Light. So
I mean, PBR Keystone. All right.
I actually like PBR, but anyway. Pete Medhurst is the play-by-play voice of the Navy midshipman. There's kind of a big game I hear on Saturday, I believe, in New York City. So we wanted to have him on. Pete, man, how are you?
Good to be with you guys again. Yeah, it's from what I understand, Army Navy is usually a pretty big deal, standalone
Yeah.
game coming up this week, at least at the Division I level. So, wish it was a little closer to home in Philadelphia, but we'll make that extra hour and a half journey to the Meadowlands for this one coming up this weekend.
Can I start begging now? Can you help four of your favorite friends to get a ticket to the game?
You're over the last 2 months, I've probably heard that about 15 times for this game. The good thing is tickets are still hard to come by, and that means that people are still going to show up. Last year was really weird. The game was at West Point. The only people there were midshipmen and the Corps of Cadets. That's it. We're used to 70,000 people being at this game, and to be able to have this thing back at full bore this year. Great for the fans, great for everybody that missed it last year, and certainly for the kids who, they're the ones that had to play in front of a lot of empty stadiums last year. To be able to have this moment, especially for the seniors, huge for them to be able to go out this way coming up on Saturday.
Pete, seriously, how hard is it to get a ticket? Like, if the guys wanted to do a show there, or if we just want to go as fans, do you have to get on a waiting list? I mean, how hard is it? How difficult is it to get a ticket?
I think like with every athletic event now, you can always find tickets on the secondary market. Scalpers are very, they've had to get very creative because everybody's going to digital ticketing. So now we don't have, people standing out in front of the stadium saying, "Hey, I got two, I got four," or whatever. So that has gone by the wayside. So now we have, with the digital ticketing, basically, you just go on StubHub or one of the other sites and you can find something. The only question is, are you going to overpay? Because those rates are usually going to be a little bit higher. Sometimes you can get lucky and call the ticket office. Maybe they've got some laying around. But usually the secondary market's the way to go. And I think you can find secondary market tickets for just about any athletic event now.
Yeah, the
Or Pete,
Meadowlands
you could be the.
is a very big venue also, so.
It is, but this game's been played there in the Link, in Baltimore, and the place has had no problem filling up, no
Yeah.
problem selling out. You've still got all the alums that come back for part of it, and you have the people that are big event seekers, people that have never been to this game show up every year because you talk to. I mean, you come across people all the time that have never been to this game every year when you go to it, and they're just amazed at. All of the pageantry that goes into it, the people you see. I mean, I've shaken hands with multiple presidents at this game. I had Mark Wahlberg in my booth a couple of years ago, secretaries of the Navy, and other dignitaries as well. Just brings out a very special group of people, and it's provided moments certainly I'll never forget. But as I often tell people, and we were reminded today in our community at Navy, Brian Bourgeois played football for us in the early 2000s. Commander of SEAL Team 8 perished in a training accident a
Yeah.
few days ago, and it snaps you back to reality as to what these young men are playing for on Saturday. For many, it's their last football game, but the seniors 6 months from now They're going to join the greatest fighting force in the country, protect our freedoms. So we can all sit here and express opinions about college sports and things of that nature. And, you know, whether we agree, disagree, nobody's a Democrat, nobody's a Republican this weekend. It's just a football game and everybody's competing like heck on each side, but they all know they're brothers in arms when the game is over because they'll join the greatest fighting force in the country.
Yeah, that's well put, Pete. You got very serious there. You had me giggling there for a second before you turned very serious. you were talking about all the presidents you shook hands with, all the Navy dignitary, and you know the
Republican and Democrat presidents. Yeah. I might add, both sides of the aisle. Okay, not one away. You know.
And then you go, Mark Wahlberg was in my booth. President Trump, President Obama, President Bush, President, you know, whoever, and Marky Mark. Did he bring the funky bunch?
Hey, you never know. Mark Wahlberg might end up playing one of them in a movie someday. So you never know.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Will the Pete, will the president be on site this year?
I've not heard. Usually we would have heard by now because they'll send you out a very special, hey, you better be here super early type gram, you know, to avoid security issues. That's the one thing. When the president comes, if you're not in the building early, you can get left outside for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, to put it bluntly, the BYU guys who started a pregame really early and stayed in our press box till 3 a.m., they would have to be in there super duper early, or they would get left outside for their long pregame activities if they didn't show up, you know, before all the security stuff takes place. So that's the one thing. When a president shows up, a lot of dogs, a lot of people with earpieces, a lot of people in suits and coats and stuff like that. But I do not believe President Biden is coming this year.
Okay.
Pete, as far as the game is concerned, one of the things that I've heard a lot this week with the talking heads is people arguing what is the greatest rivalry in all of college football. And, you know, people always say Alabama, Auburn, or Michigan, Ohio State. But to me, I have to say, not because you're on, to me, Army, Navy has been played the longest. And the pageantry between the both sides, knowing that, you know, obviously – when it comes down to it, and there's ever a war, God forbid, but if there's ever a war, those guys, men and women, are going to be together lockstep. But that one game every single year, just to watch all the before, the middle, the during, after, all that, it's just such a special game. And to me, I think it's the greatest rivalry. What do you think?
I mean, I think we get too caught up in selecting. When we put these polls up, and we see them all the time at this time of the year, we get into the final games of the season when we have, you know, Alabama, Auburn, USC, UCLA, Army, Navy, obviously. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you all know there in your region, you know, Duke, Carolina is as thick a contested rivalry as we have in any sport in this country. And I think what makes I'm not sure there is a such thing as the greatest rivalry because they're all significant in their areas of the country. The only thing about Army-Navy is it's a global rivalry because, you know, we've all got kids from, you know, darn near 50 states in the country. We've got students in our, you know, midst from nearly every state in the country. So from that standpoint, maybe from a global perspective, because some guys listening in Japan somewhere or Korea, you know, the Middle East this weekend. Maybe that's one way it separates it. But I think what makes rivalries is because of the intensity in their respective areas. That's what makes the rivalries such, you know, usually greater games than anything else because of the intensity of the fan base. You know, Duke, Carolina, probably as good as any rivalry we've got, you know, in college basketball, in any sport. Army, Navy, in any of the sports because of what it means on their respective campuses. We know what it means, you know, in communities like Auburn and Alabama, you know, the Egg Bowl with Mississippi and Mississippi State, the Battle for L.A., California, you know, USC and UCLA, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, Washington State. I mean, you can go all around the country. I mean, hell, we can find these at the D2 level, D3 level. I mean, let's go inside a CIAA. You know, I mean, we can do this in all different parts of the country. But what makes those games so special is the regionalization, the intensity of the rivalry, families. I mean, in a lot of these families, some you got Duke, some you got Carolina, some you got Alabama, some you got Auburn. It makes for some interesting moments in some of those homes during this time of the year. But the games are great. They're usually, you know, well attended. There's great tailgating and parties that come along with it. So maybe the global perspective makes Army Navy certainly the best. But, you know, I think every rivalry in every community to those people is the best because of what it means to them in their respective communities.
Pete, we're obviously talking about the Army-Navy game, and I'm sure we'll touch on it more, but the Pirates are headed up to Annapolis again. Things went rather well last time with the 54-yard field goal at the end of the game. First, let's talk about that before we move into the bowl game. What was it like on the other side there calling that the end of that game? Obviously, for East Carolina fans and Jeff Charles, one of the playboys of the Pirates, you know, Owen Daffer hitting that 54-yard field goal for the win very unexpectedly. Coach Houston did not expect him to make that kick. I don't know if you saw Coach Houston's, if you've seen any video, there was a meme of Coach Houston's reaction on the sideline from CBS Sports Network. He said, holy. Yeah. And when it was good, what was it like from your side? Were you shocked when that kick was good?
To be honest with you, no, because Owen had made one from 50 in high school, so it's not as if he didn't have the leg to do it. Now Mike sees him kick every day in practice, but you know, he drilled it. I mean, that thing would have been good from 60, maybe beyond 60. So it wasn't as if he didn't have the leg. But I think we are mentally in tune. I mean, you know, the one thing that broadcasters do, you watch a lot of lazy network broadcasters. How many times can they tell you, oh, it's a freshman kicker. It's a freshman kicker. Hey, it's a freshman kicker. Hey, he's a freshman kicker. They really don't want to have to kick this long field goal. Look, it doesn't matter in college athletics anymore whether it's a kid's a freshman, sophomore, junior, seniors. We watch seniors kick the ball all over the stadium. Sometimes a kid can either kick or he can't. And, you know, like I said, Dafford made one from 50 plus in high school. So, you knew he had the leg to do it and, you know, good for him. I mean, he just blasted it through there. That's kind of the way I called it. You know, you tip your cap to the kid. I thought both teams played really good football. It was one of our better games offensively, ironically, as good as we've been, you know, in the latter half of the season defensively, especially against Cincinnati, SMU and Houston. You know, there were a couple of moments. I mean, Ehlers to Snead. I mean, you know, I mean, that's a play that we just can't allow, but it's a play, you know, is out there because of those two guys. So even before Owen gets to make the kick, I mean, and the thing was, is we had done a reasonably decent job on Snead. And then he goes out, makes a couple of huge plays, you know, during the course of the game. But that's, you know, that's if anybody's watched Holton during his career, You know, he's capable of making those plays and shrugging pass rushers off and, you know, keeping plays alive. It was a fun football game. I mean, I think anybody that showed up in the joint was entertained, that's for sure. And, you know, I think as this league goes along, I think these two teams are going to have a lot to say about what happens in this league going in its future right now. I thought East Carolina did a solid job putting some money on the table and some more time for Mike. Gets those people from, you know, nipping at your heels a little bit, trying to hire your coach. And kudos to the administration there, recognizing a good thing. And as I told you all multiple times when they hired him, you knew Mike was going to get it together there, and you're starting to see those things. They had a philosophy this year. They had an identity. You know, they were physical. It's as physical an East Carolina football team as I've ever seen. I mean, ever seen. I think you got to go back to like Robert Jones and company before you saw a team that might have been that physical, you know. So I give them a lot of credit for recognizing the work Mike has done and allows him and his staff now to continue that work, be able to go out and tell recruits, hey, we're going to be here. We're going to be here for a while, and we're building something really special, and you really need to become a part of it.
And Pete, with that money,
and some of those guys might Might not like that having to go all the way back to Robert Jones' comment. We were pretty physical in some of those conference championships we won in Conference USA under Skip. We only played you guys one time when Skip was here, and that was 06. But, yeah, we were pretty physical in Skip's later days. And on offense, we were physical under Ruff. We just weren't very physical on defense. But, Dave, go ahead with what you were going to say.
Yeah, I just had a follow-up. That
Mensa era.
That's right. Matt Semenza was pretty darn tough.
The Matt Semenza era was before the Holtz era, though. So.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah,
Matt
that's how they refer to it in Greenville, the Matt Semenza era, right?
That's right. Mark Liviano and the Hart twins. And
I was
the
just
90s defense.
Hey, Skip's available if Mike needs an assistant. Skip's available right now, unfortunately.
Exactly. Pete, I was going to talk about the fact when you look at there's a reason why Mike got the number he did. And I don't know if you know this, but with Coach Ken and now Mike, I think they're tied for third as far as salaries go in the American. So when Fickle and who else was the guys helping me out with you? Dana with $4 million, and Luke Fickle's got 3.4, and then it's Coach Ken and Mike have 2.3 million apiece, somewhere in that neighborhood. So when those two guys leave for the Big 12, the only other coach we have, what guys was it? Was UTSA?
UTSA will be the highest paid, as we said.
Yeah, $3 million. Yeah, he got a $3 million payday. So, but those two guys will be virtually tied for second in the new league.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Jeff earned that at UTSA. I mean, you think about the short-term progress that they've made, you know, with that program. And like all the other programs coming from these different leagues, people are going to get to the American, and they're going to realize, whoa, that's a pretty good level of football. You know, I think you look at our TV dollars in our league, you look at the money that our coaches are paid, and people are going to get here and they're going to realize, whoa, this is a pretty good product. Even the teams right now, you know, I don't know how many teams in conference. And I know we got blown out by Marshall score wise in the first game. We moved the ball up and down the field between the 20s. We just couldn't stop them, A, and we couldn't finish drives, B. But I don't know how many teams in any of these other leagues want, you know, much to do with a lot of the teams in our league on a year in and year out basis. I mean, I think our teams in the American, even the ones that are going to be left behind when these folks leave and the new ones that are coming in, this league is still going to be really tough from Saturday to Saturday. And I think the additional resources that the UTSAs, the North Texases, you know, people like that are going to get coming into our league, I think it's going to help their programs get even better. So I think our league is still going to be competitive as heck. You know, Saturday to Saturday. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Tulsa should have beaten Cincinnati. I mean, how many times can they get the ball inside the 3-yard line and be inches away? So, I mean, you look at you know, Davis Brin thrown for over 400 at Ohio State from Tulsa. I mean, the people in our league can play. And I think the new folks are going to find that. And I think the competitiveness of the league will still be there. You know, when these teams leave. So somebody's going to benefit from it. Somebody's going to have to finish first. And, you know, I think Navy and East Carolina are going to have a lot to say about what this league is going forward, especially when these folks finally get out of here, I think, by 23.
Yeah.
How no did doubt. You like we saw in a group text today, I was just going to ask you, and I know we'll talk about the game here in a second, but what did you think about Herb Street's comment today on Twitter about Cincinnati and all that mess? I thought
that wasn't today. Recently.
That's the first
Mike
time.
Mike DeCourcy wrote on it today in the Sporting News, and I really don't know where Kirk was going because, you know, yeah, Timmy and Nicole have done a good job trying to prop up, you know, other teams and other brands in college football, and I think that's all. That's all Tim has been talking about is hey, we've got more teams in this country right now than just Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma.
I wish we could have like a cage fight between Brando and Herb Street, and Brando would kick the shit out of Herb Street.
You know, I'll tell you guys, Herb Street really, you know, when he first broke onto the scene, he was the most likable guy around. I really felt like somehow over the years, he started to become more of an elitist, in my opinion. And that comment yesterday, when you really dissect it, I thought that was a very elitist comment. It kind of reeks of like the P5 Homer, if you will. I was surprised he didn't take it down. I mean, it just seemed way out of line coming from him.
I'll tell you what it is. Matt. When it comes right down to it, him's a big baby because Ohio State isn't in the playoffs and Michigan's in the playoff and Cincinnati, where are they at? They're in Ohio and they're in the playoffs. And him Buckeyes were shitting at home. That's his real problem. Kurt's just being a big baby. He's angry. The school from Ohio is in the playoffs and it's not him Buckeyes. And so, the comment really didn't make any sense if you really, really think about it. So I don't know if he was calling out Brando or who he was calling out, but, we have a lot of respect for Tim Brando. Brando's been on the show. Brando, I believe the reason he's not at CBS right now is because he stood up for UAB when the University of Alabama and Bear Bryant Jr. and some other folks basically forced them to shut down their football program backhandedly, and he went public with the information. And I really believe that's kind of why he was made to leave CBS and broadcasting SEC games. So, but I love Brando and Herbstreit. I've lost all respect for him, man. Like you said, Matt, he's an elitist. He's obnoxious. And I think he thinks he's the king of college football. I think people have blew smoke up his ass so long that he believes his own hype. He thinks he is bigger than the game of college football. He thinks he's the king of college football. He's Mr. Saturday, fly here, fly there, game day, then I'm going to go call a game somewhere else. Yeah, I think Herbstreit, he lost a lot of fans with that comment, and I think, as my daddy would say, he's gotten a little too big for his britches.
He has. I agree. And I say this every week, guys, just about, I feel like, so not to be repetitive on the show here, but, the main knock, when you look at the P5 homers who are always looking to bash the so-called G5, which I hate that term, but it's always the schedule or the lack of schedule. But here's the thing, right? The same people who are knocking our schedule are schools like Virginia Tech, for example, who removed us from their schedule because they kind of have the power to do so. It's and when a P5 does schedule a G5, it's usually more often than not on their terms. It's going to be on their home field or a 2-for-1 and a neutral site, that type of thing. So you can't have it both ways. You can't knock people for a lack of schedule and at the same time avoid scheduling them. You just can't do that. So the whole argument makes no sense to me.
Well, I mean, look at what Cincinnati did. I mean, Cincinnati goes out, schedules a Big Ten team on the road, beats them. Goes on the road, beats Notre Dame. So, they with what limited out of conference opportunities Cincinnati had, they did their business. And the problem is we have a perception that if you're not in the Power Five, you can't play college football. And that's just not the case. There's just so many kids all over college football, kids that are playing in the American, coming from all these big programs. You go look at the rosters. I mean, Coach Niumatalolo was talking about that this year. I mean, every week we're showing up against somebody that's got fifth and sixth year guys who, in many cases, were at Power Five programs to start their careers. So while the depth of a G5 roster, certainly you could question against a P5, starting 11 versus starting 11, some of these G5s can play every bit as good as some of the P5s. And Cincinnati's going to unfortunately be, it's going to be the playoffs going to be a referendum on Cincinnati. And if they go out and get blown out by Alabama in some capacity, everybody's going to go, see, we told you, the Notre Dame win was a fluke. And, but that's unfair. Right,
speaking of Notre Dame, they would just be doing what Notre Dame does every time they make the playoffs, get blown out.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, I think Cincinnati, people don't realize Jerome Ford was at Alabama. They're running back. Yeah. They've got to get that game in his hands, reduce the possessions in the game. They got to help their defense, stay off the field. The more opportunities you give Bryce Young and Jameson Williams, then that's going to become a problem. But if Cincinnati can somehow establish Ford in this game and shorten the game a little bit, they're going to give themselves a chance coming up against Alabama. But they've got to play a high-level game. They do a lot of stuff in terms of late hits, unsportsmanlike conduct. They love to jabber, you know, out there. They push the envelope on a lot of that stuff. And if they can avoid the 15-yard penalties, they're going to have a chance to stay in the game. Because if you get those against Alabama, that's just going to, you know, that's going to pull the curtain down on your night. Just plain and simple.
Pete, what happens if Cincinnati does beat Alabama?
They go to the next round.
Yeah.
I understand. I know that. I understand that. I'm saying what I'm being by that is what excuses do you anticipate that the –
They didn't take them serious. They didn't take them serious. Well, they clearly didn't take – Cincinnati serious, and they, you know, that'll be the excuse, which is no excuse.
But I also think that's part of, I think it's going to take a win like that to get, just like Tim Brando talks about every week, the narrative that gets pushed by a lot of the people, you know, that are the voices of college football is the Power Five.
Yep.
And I don't know where this is going to end up a couple of years from now. I don't know if we're really having our own G5 tournament or not. I know the teams in it don't want it. No. You know, we all want to be a part of the same big pie with everybody else. So, unfortunately, if we can't get enough teams involved here and more importantly, get people taking the G5 team seriously, then, you know, like if Cincinnati gets toasted here, then we may never get a seat at the table. Again, unless somebody just has an extraordinary out of conference schedule and does something extraordinary with it.
Well, otherwise, you know what's so stupid about this, Pete, is ESPN makes his arguments, and ESPN controls a lot of this narrative. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. They have the contracts for the American. They have the contract for the MAC, the Sun Belt, partial contract with Mountain West, and a little bit of a contract with Conference USA. They control the majority of the TV for the Group of Five conferences. If you look at the television rankings, the American Athletic Conference Championship game had a higher ranking than the ACC Championship game in the rating. And that was going head-to-head with the SEC Championship game. Mm-hmm. And they still had a higher rating than the ACC. If you'd have put it on head-to-head with the ACC Championship game, there's no telling what the rating would have been. So why in the hell does ESPN, if I was Disney, and I sometimes think these Disney executives are just asleep at the wheel. If I was a Disney executive and I saw people on my network talking trash about property that I own the rights to that was giving me better ratings than property that I'm paying significantly more for, and I heard them up there trashing that product, I would fire that son of a bitch on the spot. I would fire his ass.
Fire him tonight.
It just doesn't make it just doesn't make good business sense. What kind of business strategy is that? To, hey, I own this product. I own the rights to this product. And now I'm going to talk trash about it. And it's bringing me in better ratings than product that I pay 3 to 4 times more for. I mean, it's just illogical.
Yeah, and I think that's where knowledge within the walls of ESPN has to be better. All of us that take the time on all of these podcasts and any other outlet that publicizes college football, I mean, we are educating people every day about the quality in the G5. People who have not seen Cincinnati play before are going to get their first chance to see them on the national stage coming up here. Some people obviously took them in based on the ratings during the championship weekend. So, you know, I mean, people that are looking ahead to the draft now, they want to see Desmond Ridder because they think he's got an opportunity to play in the NFL. So teams that are looking for quarterbacks, their fans are going to start peeking around at this as well. That's the one thing that I will never understand. In any walk of life, and you know, have worked in radio my entire life, and I know what the ratings are all about. If we have a product that's really, really good, we need to tell everybody about how great that product exactly is. Because if you go back and look at some of the ratings of all the American games through the last couple of seasons, the Americans done a really good job on TV, and Mike Oresco knows what he's doing. You look at the markets, and we talked about this a few weeks ago when we talked about the league's expansion. When you look at the markets that this league is taking in, Mike knows what he's doing. If I got more eyes potentially to watch TVs, I can go to TV networks. I can go to national advertisers and say, look, I'm going to put your product in front of this many people on TV. I've got all these good TV markets here. Cincinnati and Houston, two terrific TV markets. Houston's a top 10 market. So that's why that number, that game gets such a really good number. And, you know, I think that's why Mike went out looking to replace those schools with other good TV markets. And I thought he did a solid job in accomplishing that. And who's going to benefit from that? ESPN and its family of networks.
Pete, let me ask you a question. And you know, you might not have the answer to this, but it's just more of a hypothetical. If Oklahoma State converts the last play of that game, and they score there and they knock off Baylor, do you think that we're having this conversation?
I still think Cincinnati gets in, but I believe the committee discussion would have created some angst if we were able to watch it. Like if we were watching it, like votes being tabulated, you know, with 35% of the precincts in, Oklahoma State's leading the voting right now. I think there would have been more angst. The good news is it took it out of the committee's hands, so we didn't have to worry about that. But I do believe you have a point, Matt. I believe if Oklahoma State converts that and gets that ball in, even though that game was not, as the committee likes to say, they weren't in control of the game, wasn't aesthetically pleasing by any stretch of the imagination, but we would have had some significant debate in the room about Oklahoma State, the way they've played, beating Oklahoma, then beating Baylor, being a conference champion. We would have had significant debate on that. I still think Cincinnati probably wins a close vote, but fortunately, Baylor making that stop took the vote pretty much out of the committee's hands.
And speaking of which, Pete, as far as we talk playoff expansion, you know, it looks like there will be 12 teams, but the guys have got to get together. And you know, when you have a conference commissioner like Sankey, I think he's hurting his stock. I think he's hurting himself. We know that you represent the SEC, yes, you know, Commissioner Sankey. However, you're making all the rest of the Power Five commissioners upset. And this might be our one chance as group of five guys to get with the rest of those commissioners and say, hey, come to our side, because this guy wants to blow up all of college football and have basically one power league, in my opinion, with the SEC.
Well, I don't think there's any question that the Power Five schools in some capacity want to be, you know, by themselves and competing, you know, not only for this championship, but the basketball championship as well. They want to control all the dollars. I mean, that makes perfect sense, to be honest with you, from a business standpoint. Plus, Greg's teams in his league have, you know, look, I mean, his teams, he's got two of the top four teams in the country right now. Typically, they have, you know, four or five teams within the top 15 or 20, and he's playing to the teams in his league. He's doing what a commissioner of the SEC is supposed to do. He's doing what Mike Oresko is trying to do on behalf of the American. They're being proactive. If there's nobody there to stop you, then yes, you're going to be able to push your agenda. The question's going to be, you know, with a guy like Jim, if Jim Delaney was still in charge in the Big Ten, you know, Jim Delaney was a guy that was strong enough to be able to stand up to this a little bit and have throw some weight around and have some clout. But you got Kevin Warren, a new commissioner there. You have a new commissioner in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And when you look around, Bob Bowlesby at the Big 12 certainly has been there and gone through a couple of these battles now. So the question ultimately is going to be, is when the presidents of the schools, the ADs, and the TV networks, because don't forget, TV is going to be a major part of this, and those bowl games. You know, when they get together, they try to divide up all of this big pie of money, because it's all it is, a big pile of money. When they try to divide it up, Greg's just being proactive on behalf of his league until somebody else comes along and says, well, Greg, we're not quite going to do it the way you're trying to here. So I don't admonish Greg for trying it until someone is strong enough to come along and say, you know, halt. I mean, Pac-12's got a new commissioner. I mean, you got three new guys in charge of this thing. So Greg's doing what he's supposed to on behalf of his league to try and make his schools the most money right now. So unless somebody's there to stop him, I mean, Mark Everett's talking today. Mark Everett's going, I don't see how we can get to, you know, 14, 15, or 16. Mark, your FCS, your Division II, your Division III championships have 100 teams in the playoffs. So, I mean, what are we talking about? I mean,
it's
there's no leadership at the top. There's no one to say to Greg Sankey, look, Greg, we have to look at this from a global perspective on behalf of the other 130 teams that play Division I football. There's no leader. There's no leader in that category to do that. So Greg is stepping forward saying, look, if nobody else is going to lead, I'm going to lead until somebody tells me I can't.
Yeah, I agree. Somebody, these commissioners, and I've said it before, and then we'll move on to the bowl, but some of these presidents and these ADs at the Group of Five level need to grow some balls. There needs to be, I've said for years, there's got to be ground somewhere for an antitrust lawsuit. There just has to be. I mean, to me, and I'm no lawyer, and I know we had DG on the other night, David Glenn, who has a law background, and he kind of implied there wasn't grounds for a lawsuit, and I respectively disagree with Dave.
Kyle, the NCAA is made up of the schools that play, so they'd be suing themselves.
You sue the Power Five schools. You don't sue the NCAA. You sue all the Power Five institutions for creating a monopoly. They've created a monopoly. They've made it unfair. Competitive disadvantage, antitrust laws, they've been violated. Just the term Power Five, which is not an NCAA term, it's a made-up term.
Media, the media.
That right there is taking control of the marketplace in an unfair. It is putting schools that don't have that term, power, beside. I don't even know how that's legal. Power Five, Group of Five. We're all Division One. I don't. Some people got to get. Look, I can tell you this. Utah, their senator years ago. We all know the story. He threatened to take legal action, and they got in the Pac-12 like the next week. So somebody's scared of something out there. When Tulane threatened to do whatever they were going to do that back in the BCS days, that's when suddenly if you remember originally there was really no true access to get to a BCS bowl. And then they made it to, if I remember right, if you finished inside the top 12, you got to go to a BCS bowl if you were a non-BCS team. So anytime somebody's threatened legal action, they're throwing a bone. In Utah's case, they were throwing a big bone. And they were winning at a high level at the time also. But anyway, moving on to the bowls, we can talk about this all night. We ain't going to get anywhere. the Pirates headed to Annapolis to take on Boston College in the Military Bowl. Obviously, everybody's got a lot of questions. Some people have been, Bubba's been to Annapolis a couple of times. I've never been there, Matt. I don't think you've ever been there, Dave. I don't know if you've ever been there or not. I've been to Baltimore, never been to Annapolis. So first things first, if you're going to be in Annapolis for 2 to 3 days, besides the bowl game, first, just broad spectrum question. First, what is one place you'd have to go, or one thing you'd have to see in Annapolis if you're going to be there for 2 to 3 days?
At that time of year, you don't really get the full fervor of the City Dock area, but the City Dock area would still be a place that I would obviously go. You can walk on to the Naval Academy and walk around. You just have to have an ID. You got to show the ID when you walk in through the gate. And you can walk around the grounds of the Naval Academy and see what it's all about. So those are two pretty obvious things right away in Annapolis that I would certainly look to see. You have some really good restaurants in that City Dock and downtown area, depending on, you know, how much you want to spend, how fine you want to get in terms of the dining, places like Carroll's Creek, you know, Boatyard's fantastic. That's a place that usually is open till midnight. Carroll's Creek, Iron Rooster, they tend to close around 9 o'clock. Middleton's Tavern, other places downtown. So there's going to be plenty. If you're staying in Annapolis, there's going to be a decent amount, you know, down in that area. I know the team hotels are usually in D.C. for the Military Bowl, so there's going to be an aspect of that. And I know people are going to be staying in D.C. Plenty to do there, obviously. Going to be more expensive. Bring some money if you're going to be in D.C.
I think most Pirates are staying in Annapolis from what I'm hearing. I'm sure some people are staying in D.C. and obviously teams are, but from the message boards, I've seen pretty much every pirate I've spoke with stay in Indianapolis.
Well, that's good then. I mean, a lot of great hotels there. Right on West Street, which is right down the street from the stadium. I mean, you could legitimately, I mean, there's a couple right there on West Street by the traffic circle where you could literally just stay there, keep your car parked there, and just walk down the street to the stadium. So that's a good thing from that perspective. If you're staying a little bit further out, but still in Annapolis, like the Doubletree, places like that, you know, that's 5 minutes, 8 minutes from the stadium. So that's a good thing. You can stay out by BWI, so you can fly back if you want. That's 20 minutes away, 25 minutes away. So that's not really that bad either. That's the great thing about this particular bowl game. You can do Baltimore, Annapolis, and Washington in kind of a triangle over a couple of days and really manage to do a lot. Teams get the teams usually fit a lot. The bowl does a nice job. There's a big parade up Main Street in Annapolis usually involved with this. They've had the Clydesdales, and they bring in a lot of the, you know, high school bands, youth football teams and stuff like that have always been a part of that. So the bowl does a really good job of trying to make some things happen. I mean, look, let's face it. Weather in Annapolis in December, we've seen this bowl game 60 degrees. We've seen this bowl game 6 degrees. So, you know, we've had, I think, Virginia Tech, Cincinnati here was frigid. Maryland and Marshall was warm. Navy, Virginia wasn't that, you know, really bad of a day. So we've seen a little bit of everything at that time of the year. But I think the bowl does a great job between Annapolis and D.C. particularly in finding plenty of activities for the teams and obviously the many fans that will be coming to the area. Because let's face it, I mean, for East Carolina and B.C., this is uncharted territory for these teams based on lack of success over recent years. So you would think that we're going to have a couple of alumni bases because of how easy it is to travel to D.C. for both. And we should be able to get a decent crowd out of this coming up for the Military Bowl.
But best crab cakes in Annapolis.
Say that again.
Best crab cakes in Annapolis.
Oh, geez. This time of year? That's a great question. Phillip Seafood, obviously, that's a no-brainer. That's down in the City Dock area. They've also got one up in the Baltimore area, I believe, still. That's always pretty good. Carroll's Creek's usually got really good food of all types, you know, American and seafood, so you're going to be in good shape there. The Boatyard does a great job. Their food presentation is fantastic. That's down in the City Dock area, over toward Eastport a little bit. So that's another place that gives you both kind of an American and seafood type menu. But the food presentation is also good. I mean, it doesn't come out looking like a bunch of slop on a plate. They do a fantastic job with it as well. So those would be places certainly that I would recommend, at least at this time of the year. I'm always wary of crab cakes in December, deep up, you know, here in the mid-Atlantic. But, you know, I don't know if that crab cake's being made from the mid-Atlantic or if it's coming from Louisiana. But when it's 35 and 40 degrees this time of year here, you can kind of figure that out for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one place is rather, Dale, I know I keep stepping on you, but trying to stay on the same topic here. So I'll get this last question in, then I'll hand it to you. One place that's rather well known because it was featured on Man vs. Food is Chicken Ruth's Deli.
Mm-hmm.
They got several challenges there. The 6-pound milkshake. They have a colossal Reuben challenge. A couple of burgers. Have you done any of the challenges? First of all, I don't know who the hell can drink a 6-pound milkshake.
No,
but have you done any of the challenges? And how is the Reuben? Because I'm a Reuben fanatic.
I tried the Reuben. I'm not a huge Reuben guy, but I tried it a couple of years ago just because you have to. I mean, it's like a local delicacy here for the most part. Good sandwich, though. Good tasting sandwich. Chicken Ruth Deli is right off the Main Street area. So, again, very easily accessible. And just like whenever we go to different cities around the American, we always make it a point as a group of support staff, when we go out to eat on Friday night, we pick places that are locally native to that area. You know, you're not going to find us sitting in Applebee's or, you know, God bless Applebee's, all those places. You're not going to find us in those places on Friday nights. We're finding something that is specific to your area and your area only. Chicken Roost Deli is that place locally here. It's one of those places that you just got to try. If you're going to be here for a couple of days, like I said, you know, there's so many places that you can. But Chicken Roost Deli is like that salt of the earth, local Annapolis, downtown place that you have to go by. And, you know, again, that's one of those places where just about anything that you choose inside of a place like that is going to be fantastic. I'm a huge milkshake guy. There's no chance in Hades I could drink a 6-pound milkshake. That's just not going to happen. Every night before I go to bed, I haul out like 4 containers of blood pressure medication. So I don't think my doctor would be thrilled at me having a 6-pound milkshake at some point, though I would love to give it a try. I can tell you that.
Hey, Pete, what's the best sports bar in case we want to do a show up there? People have been at, and Pirate Nation have been asking us, like, we're the experts. So, and that we're at least I'll speak for myself. I'm not an expert on sports bars in Annapolis, but if you had a show, where would you do it from?
Probably because of the setup inside, I would probably go somewhere like West End Grill, which is right at the top of West Street, which is one of the main thoroughfares, very easily accessible right off Route 2 and Route 50. 50 obviously being the main thoroughfare through there. So I would do somewhere like West End Grill, you know, Boatyard. We've had luncheons with Coach Niamatalolo down there. That's another place that's, again, more down toward the downtown area. Trying to think of the name of that. There's one of the hotels that's changed names a couple of times where a friend of mine works, and one of the local podcasts here, the Sing Second podcast with Navy, tapes their show a lot from there. You could go to that place because I'm sure a lot of Pirate Nation will be in that hotel. I'll text that to you after the show what their proper name is now. Huh?
The Graduate?
Yes, I think that is their new name. So they that's where our guys tape that podcast, and they've got plenty of room in the lobby there. So that would be a place easily accessible. And I could have my guy get y'all set up there to make sure you got Ethernet and whatever you need, because they've got plenty of room in that building down there. And that's the one that's literally right up the street where you within walking distance to the stadium. It's probably a 3/4 mile walk, maybe a mile walk, if that, to the stadium. So it's not going to be very far from Navy Marine Corps at all.
Yeah, I know that's where I believe I go from 24/7. Hoist the Colors is sitting up his meet and greet at is at that hotel. So,
hey Pete, let's say our fans looking for a different type of nightlife, something a little more exciting, and they wanted to head up to Atlantic City. How far of a drive is that?
It's about, I would say, 215, 220.
Oh wow, okay, much further than I thought. Okay, I
was thinking it was but okay. There are like we were talking before the show, there are 3 legitimate full-size casinos within 45 minutes to an hour of Annapolis. MGM, which is down at National Harbor, that's a humongous area with hotels, restaurants, shops, and obviously a full-size casino there, BetMGM. You have Maryland Live, which is located in Laurel, Maryland City area, which is right near BWI. So that's, you know, 35 minutes from Annapolis. And then you got the Horseshoe, which is right next to Raven Stadium in Baltimore, which is probably another, that's probably 50 minutes from the stadium, if that. So that's not far at all. I mean, that's easy to find within, you know, less than an hour drive from Annapolis. If you're staying in D.C. where the team might be, BetMGM's 15 minutes from there. So that's an easy, and trust me, they got so much stuff down there at National Harbor that you'll be hard pressed to get through all of it at night, you know, one time, especially if you go spend some time up at the casino. They do a tremendous job at the casino. I got a great relationship with them at our local radio station And those folks doing a really nice job down there. So a lot of great restaurants down there. Brass Tap. Brother Jimmy's Barbecue we just had. I'm telling you, if you go there, the brisket quesadillas that I had, we just did a remote from there last week. The brisket quesadillas at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue, probably a top three all-time food for Pete on Sports in the 51 years I've been trudging around this country.
And where's that located at? Where's that located at, Pete?
That's down at National Harbor.
Okay. Now, another question for you. In Annapolis or nearby Annapolis, local breweries and just good places to get craft beer?
I would say Ram's Head Tavern, which is right on West Street, right down by the State House area. Right, it's not far from the Graduate. You could walk there from the Graduate. That would be a great place. And there's also a couple of other independent places right around there that you could do the same thing, because they've done a nice job in that area. Small places. I mean, you walk by them and you almost pass them. You're like, whoa, I didn't see that place there. So folks that are staying at the Graduate, which I think is going to be a popular spot, within walking distance going toward downtown on the main thoroughfare, you're going to find places like that. You'll find three or four places like that down in that area, though. And Ram's Head certainly, because Ram's Head also has live entertainment. Usually, if you catch it in the right weekend, they've got a lot of name brand bands and solo musicians that come in there as well. So if you catch it on the right night, you might be able to catch a noteworthy entertainer in there as well. But those are places that, again, within walking, I think that's the important thing, within walking distance to the Graduate, that are going to be, I think, very attractive to fans down in that area who don't want to drive all over the place. And obviously we know it's a little safer to walk than it is to drive after you've had a few of those craft beers out there. So there's not going to be any shortage of things to find, places to go, no matter what area. And that's the beauty of the Military Bowl. You can stay in a lot of different places in the area, still be within 40, 45 minutes of the stadium and have a spectacular time in the area. That's what for all the out of town teams, that's why I think it's such a nice draw for the Military Bowl, is there's just so many different places you can stay and have a great time.
Yeah, I have two more questions and then I'll shut up, Dave, I promise. one, how is the Uber / Lyft service in the area? I'm assuming it's plentiful. And then the second one is there a, I know there's tours of DC. Is there any Annapolis to DC tour? Is there any, can I hop on a bus in Annapolis and take a tour of DC?
Probably not from that distance away. You'd have to end up in DC. There's some, there are bus tours in DC that you can sit on a bus and ride around and do it. But from Annapolis to there, I do not believe that service exists. And the Uber and Lyft is usually better than average in this area. So you shouldn't have much of an issue finding Uber or Lyft within a reasonable amount of time throughout this area.
How far is it, Pete, from, to help Kyle out, where could you catch the Metro? How close is that from Annapolis that you could ride into the city?
New Carrollton would be the closest probably. And that would be about a 20 minute ride going toward DC to get the new Carrollton Metro station. But again, right off Route 50. So, you know, pretty convenient to where you're trying to go. So it's probably about 20, 25 minutes from downtown Annapolis to get to the Metro there.
Maybe, Kyle, what you can do is do that and then find the Metro to maybe the closest place to a bus that you could ride around and then get
there's a bus tour company actually through the Military Bowl that is offering significant discounts if you book. You got to book by a certain date, and it's got to be a certain time around the Military Bowl in D.C., and if you download the Military Bowl app, you can access that information. I was just more or less asking kind of the question what you're talking about getting to DC without having to drive into DC. So I kind of got an idea now. But yeah, do we have some questions? Have anybody posted any questions for Pete in the, in the chat?
Well, one thing, Johnny Robertson mentioned, not really a sports bar, but the Ram's Head Tavern has plenty of room to do a show. He brought that up for Pete.
Thank you, Johnny.
Doing that.
Plenty we of have room because they have full-scale concerts in there. So, yeah, I mean, they got plenty of room in there.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that are chiming in about cost of tickets and things dealing. We've sold about, by the way, Pete, 4,000. We have the top of the screen through ecupirates.com, through the university, people buying them there. Our goal for the show, meaning what we hope for tickets sold for ECU, is 10,000. So that's why Bubba has 4,000 sold. We have 6,000 to go. We're hoping to at least have 10,000 people in the stands for ECU. And it looks like between what Kyle is saying, between what ECU has already sold plus what the Military Bowl, people are buying through the Military Bowl, it'll be close to that amount without even trying.
Which is good, because that means you get your full payment. You know, that's Military Bowl is usually $1 million payout per school. So that means you get your full payout, maybe even more, if you sell your sell all of your allotted tickets that you're contracted to sell through the bowl game. And let's face it, for all of these bowls and all of these schools right now, as we are trying to get further and further away from the pandemic, you know, selling tickets for people to go out of town is still a little bit of a challenge for some places. But I say, because BC and ECU have been trying to get back to a place that they both experienced, because both programs have had success. So they know what it's, I mean, their alums want it. And now that they've got it again, here's the opportunity to show Mike Houston and Jeff Hafley, hey, you know, we've got your back. We appreciate the work that you, your staff, and your kids, support staff, everybody administratively is putting in to rebuild this product and to make it good again. Well, here's your opportunity. I mean, Boston to Washington's, I mean, I do this all the time during basketball season. It's a 45-minute flight, okay? There's no excuse for any BC alums not to be able to make that trek. Heck, I drive it most of the time. It's 6 hours. It's very easy. This is a straight drive, you know, outside of, you know, the hiccup that is New York City. It's a very easy drive. That's the great thing for both fan bases. It's a drivable bowl game. You don't even have to fly if you fear flying and don't want to get in an airplane, you know, with 150 other people wearing a mask, you know, stuff like that. So you control the environment in your car, your van, or whatever you're driving in. So there's no excuses, I think, for either one of these schools who are hungry for success. Your fan base is fantastic. I mean, like I said, I've listened to post-game shows over the last few years, and I've heard the pain and the voices of these fans. People have been fans for years of this school and this football team and this program. They desperately want a consistent winner again. They keep coming back to the stadium, supporting teams year after year, and they're hungry for more success like there is this season. Well, here's your opportunity to show that, hey, you know, we are all in with Coach Houston and his players, and let's go show up in Annapolis, because I think East Carolina could legitimately have a really nice home field advantage here in the stands, quite frankly, because of the proximity to Greenville and the ease of the location here. So to me, there's no reason for, if all these people who call in and whine and were ready to fire everybody after the Appalachian State game, because I heard them all, I listened to the whole thing for 2 hours, okay? If all those people who were, you know, gosh, we got to be a winner, we got to do this, well, here's your chance. If you say you'll support a winner, here's your chance right now with a bowl game that's pretty proximate to Greenville. Show up and support your Pirates coming up in the Military Bowl.
Yeah, that's what I've been preaching, Pete. You know, we've been without a winner for 7 years now, and Pirate Nation, like you just mentioned, is getting what it wants. So it's time to put up or shut up.
It's a loyal fan base, Bubba. I mean, there's no question about it, and you know, but here's opportunity, you know, this is what it's all about. Here's your opportunity. You know, people talk a lot off mic, but you know, now's time to put up or shut up, you know, put your dollars on the table. This is not a very expensive ask. This isn't like a capital project where the athletic department is asking for, you know, a $5,000 donation or anything. That's is an
coming.
Inexpensive way for you to kind of contribute to the success of the athletic program here.
Pete, that's coming in next year. That's coming. thankful. Finally, I'm getting my wish. Finally.
Hey, man. Yeah, look, to keep up with the Joneses in this business, and we've even had to do it at Navy. You know, we've had to redo one of our indoor buildings to make it an indoor practice facility. We just, you know, did the Terwilliger Center, which has updated Ricketts Hall, which has been a long time building athletically on our campus at Navy, to give your teams the opportunity, and even teams at our level, like in the American, to give your teams to compete on level footing. You've got to provide the facilities. You've got to provide the support staff. And that's still vitally important to competing on a day in and day out basis right now in college athletics. I mean, it's just unfortunately where the price of the sports have gone. And if we want to continue to support our Olympic sports at our locations, you know, they need football to be successful. So this extra money that East Carolina is gaining by playing in a bowl game, adding to the Americans' coffers, which gets divided up to the all the American schools, I mean, it's a big deal. So, you know, anybody that participates in ticket buying and all the other stuff that goes with it, you're just adding to the success for East Carolina in the American Athletic Conference.
Hey, Pete, as we're winding the show down here in the last couple of weeks, I thought the uniform reveals on social media for this game were absolutely awesome for both Navy and Army. So, you know, what are your thoughts on those uniforms and the way, you know, that over the last several years, and they've gone away from just wearing the traditional uniform and making it something specific. And not only does it incorporate, you know, certain elements of each academy, but, you know, something, a specific uniform like this year, what is, it goes back to 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, I got the Fly Navy colors on right here, you know, brand new hoodie. You know, I mean, I'm a hoodie collector. I collect hoodies from all kinds of different schools. So any school out there that wants to send me a hoodie, I'll wear your hoodie. I'm just, that's kind of who I am. Just got my Fly Navy stuff for this game. And without question, Under Armour continues to do an amazing job with our equipment guy, Greg Morgenthaler. The uniforms look spectacular. The helmet design is unbelievable. The detail in the helmet is crazy how good it is. I mean, you're used to seeing us with just the real simple gold helmet. I mean, the detail on this thing, man, you know, you think the Dallas Cowboys helmet looks good. You know, this helmet that we've got, you know, trumps that. I mean, it's just amazing how the detail on this helmet has come out. So, you know, hey, we're going to look good on Saturday. I just hope we play as good as our uniform's going to look on Saturday, because ultimately you can make a big deal. We can win the uniform reveal. Just like the Washington football team for years used to win in free agency, but when it came time to get on the field, they couldn't win. I think our kids are going to be ready to wear those cool uniforms out on the field. And as you all saw, you know, our record was what it was, but we certainly didn't play like that kind of team when we played you guys a few weeks ago. So, you know, I think our kids are going to show up and play a great game coming up on Saturday.
And, Pete, speaking of the great rivalries, there's one on Sunday. You were just talking about that helmet of the opposite team that I pull for. So hopefully Washington can make it five straight there.
Hey, let's hope so, man. I mean, Ron Rivera's done a heck of a job. And the Taylor Heinicke story, man, look, they just made a movie about Kurt Warner. The way Taylor Heinicke's gone, man, I mean, they're going to end up making a movie about this guy sleeping on his sister's couch in Atlanta or whatever and taking online courses at ODU, and the phone picks up, hey, you know, we need a pandemic quarterback. We don't need you to come to the facility. Just kind of hang out where you are and be ready to go in case we need you. I mean, you think about this. If the Broncos don't have that COVID outbreak in their quarterback room last year, end up playing the Wake Forest wide receiver quarterback, Taylor Heinicke probably doesn't even get a call from Washington. Kyle Allen's their quarterback probably right now with that injury to Fitzpatrick. And Who knows if they're 6-6 right now? But Taylor Heinicke is trying to get a movie made of his own with his success right now for this football team, and hopefully they can pull it off coming up this weekend. The Logan Thomas injury hurts, man. I mean, that guy was coming back. He's already playing good football again, but his knee injury really hurts them from a production standpoint, but we'll see if they can pull it out. Dallas has got some folks, man. They got some skilled people, and they're getting some defensive reinforcements back. Parsons has been unbelievable on defense, so this is going to be a hell of a football game coming up on Sunday.
Hey, Pete, one of our loyal viewers and listeners, James down in Mississippi, chimes in saying, Pete, I know Coach Ken Niumatalolo has suffered some hard times the last couple of years at Navy. Is his job safe up there?
I think so. There's time left on the contract, so it's not as if his contract is running out at the end of this year. I think everywhere in college football, you have to throw last year out. It was what it was. This year, we're the only team in the country that's played 11 bowl-eligible teams. So, you know, that, and not that that's an excuse, but we played several of those teams very tough. Houston, SMU, you guys, Cincinnati in our league, all one-possession games. So we're not as far away from 7-5 or 8-4 as we are 0-12. So, you know, I think that's the encouraging thing. And so much of our team, freshmen and sophomore. I mean, we're just playing so many freshmen and sophomores. Army's got 2 freshmen on their roster Saturday. We got 24. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we are. And a lot of our significant pieces right now are in that freshman and sophomore class of guys that are playing significant roles right now for this football team. So, you know, you better have gotten us this year, because I think next year we're going to start to turn the corner a little bit. I certainly think we have a great chance to be bowl eligible next year. And when these guys, these sophomores get to be seniors, I think we're certainly, if not next year, the year after, going to be right back in a spot to contend for a league championship.
And as you take a look at this matchup, you talk about the factor of the youth right there on the Navy side. How do you see this one playing out? I mean, currently, Army's obviously a 7.5-point favorite last time I checked this morning. So, what are some of the key things and key aspects in this matchup? Obviously, you expect it to be a low-scoring game. Well, last year, it was 15-0. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we had Xavier Arline broke a long run, got tackled at the 1, and we never punched it in. If we punch it in, we probably win 7-3. I mean, our defense was dominating in that game. I think it's another game just like that. I think both teams have great defense, great leaders on defense. And the one aspect of the Army offense that's made huge improvement this year is the play-action passing game. And they've really hammered some people on that. I mean, going to Lynchburg and punching Liberty around like they did, that's no small feat. I mean, that's a great win for them, in their last game. So that's great momentum for them coming in. And look, Jeff's done a heck of a job. Former Navy assistant under Paul Johnson here. He knows what the drill is, and he's gotten Army turned around. And, you know, now it's our turn. We've got to answer. Malcolm obviously helped us answer in 2019, running for 300 yards and beating them 31-7. But, you know, I think we're going to see something closer to the defensive struggle it was last year with these two teams coming up this week. And the question is, which team's going to make either the key turnover or going to make the passing play that turns it into an explosive play that helps their team? Because I think that's where this game is going to be won. And Ty, over the last 6 quarters, 4 of them, he's done pretty well, looked comfortable in the passing game. Wasn't very strong in the first half against Temple, but came out the second half, was terrific. So if we play that way, then we've got a great chance to not only keep it close, but get ourselves a victory coming up. Like I said, I mean, you look at our schedule compared to theirs, I don't think it's a comparison. I mean, we're much more battle-tested. But, you know, that only helps you in analytics. This game's not one with analytics. This game is one with young men on the field blocking, tackling, and doing the things you got to do from a fundamental standpoint to win football games.
Well, Pete, I wanted to mention to you, this is Matt. I'd be remiss if the show went by and I didn't say, I mentioned this last time you were on, that I would rather play Alabama than Navy. And that remains true after our recent matchup. You know, it's just, for some reason, this triple option offense just gives us nightmares. So, you know, I was glad we were able to pull it out, but certainly wishing Navy all the best this weekend. I'd love to see Navy pull this game out, and you know, obviously a huge win for you.
Yeah, I mean, so do I. I mean, I want it for our seniors because those kids are hanging up the helmet usually at the end of this game. So this is their final opportunity, no bowl game for them this year. So I know they're going to give it their all. You know, they're going to play till they bleed, and they're going to try and get a victory. And I know all the underclass respect the hell out of the seniors. And that's where this game, you know, you have such a respect from the freshmen, sophomores, and the juniors for those seniors. They want those seniors to desperately win this football game because they know, for many of them, this is the last time they're going to play a football game, likely with full pads. They may play some flag football down the road, but this is probably their last opportunity to suit it up and go play a football game.
Pete, I tell you, I know exactly what we're going to do. Matt, big money. Matt Semenza's got a lot of money. So the secondary market, we're going to get four tickets. We're going to, like, drive up there to New York City to see the game on Saturday. We look forward to it, and it'll be a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Guys,
let's go. Let's go. Bring it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be great. And like I said, if you've never been there, certainly well worth taking in at least one time and making that investment. Because, again, you all as a fan base, you know, with your own team, you know what it's like in your building every week and everything that goes into it. You would appreciate, I think, all the things that surround the Army-Navy game coming up on Saturday. So, yeah, I mean, I hope everybody that's coming to the game has safe travels. And if you're watching it on TV, you know, hey, go Navy, beat Army.
And there you go. How can, before we let you go, I appreciate the time you've done overtime with us. How can people follow your work and obviously watch you, listen to you as well?
Obviously the Team 980 each and every day, 3 to 7, obviously outside of the DC area, you can just pull it up on the Odyssey app and hit Team 980. Very easy to find on the Odyssey app, and on Twitter at Pete Medhurst. I keep it simple. And I'm not a Twitter snob. As you guys know, I love to interact with fans, whether you want to talk about Navy football, ECU football, college football, or any kind, I'm willing to, strap it up on Twitter and talk to you about it. So, like I said, I love your fan base. I love talking football with you guys because your fan base cares, you know, about your own, you know, product and our league as a whole. So it's always great talking football with you guys and your fan base down there.
I'm going to message you and ask you about the Colorado School of Miners.
Hey, Colorado School of Mines.
Oh, I thought it was Miners.
No, it's Colorado School of Mines, though, Kyle. It's close. You were very close. So
I'm not touching it. It's a family show. I'm not touching that one.
you better not touch a miner.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh, my gosh. Before I get any more trouble, Pete, thanks, man, so much. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you very soon.
You got it, Dave. Always good to talk to you guys. Take care.
Appreciate it, buddy. All right,
bye-bye. Thanks, Pete. Take care.
Oh, my goodness. Great stuff. Love Pete. He's the best. Guys, going to be a lot of fun, obviously, with that game on Saturday. But we've got our own game to break down, obviously, December 27th. And I'm working really hard. I'm trying really hard. I'm being like Monty Hall, Wayne Brady. Let's make a deal to get off for December 27th. I might be sick, have some kind of cold or something on maybe Christmas Day. I get a cold, right, Matt?
Dave, I know a guy. I know a guy down at the Piers in Jersey. I can send him down there to take care of business for you if you need it.
Oh well, wait a minute. We have people watching and listening. They'll find out if it happens. That I was thinking more like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. If y'all can save Ferris, you can help me out on Kyle. If you can help me out on, you can be like I said, Cameron, and we can go there.
Yeah, we'll figure out something, Dave. Maybe call them in and tell them you have a raging case of a whooping belch or who knows what. I don't know.
We've got time. We'll think of something.
Yeah, Maybe tell them you, I don't know. My jokes are dirty and I don't need to make them. But anyway, we'll come up with something. I'll call your boss. I'll get y'all. Give me your boss's number and I'll make sure you have off.
All right, I'll text it to you after the show for sure. Bubba, all right, cool. Guys, before we go, we've got a big show tomorrow night and we want to plug some great programming we've had over the last few days. Bubba, very excited about tomorrow night. Let's start there.
Yeah, tomorrow night we'll be catching up with the chairman of the ECU Board of Trustees, Scott Shook. We had him on a few months ago, I guess back maybe a little bit prior to the season. Looking forward to another conversation with Scott, and we'll talk a variety of topics, as you would expect, including the contract extension and pay raise for Mike Houston. And we'll also have the TSO locker room with Jaira Wilson and Ryan Jones. Earlier today, we caught up with Cliff Godwin, so definitely check that interview out on our YouTube channel. We'll probably also include that as part of tomorrow night's show, depending on how long that show is going. But had about a 20-minute conversation with Cliff Godwin and really discussed a variety of topics with him, talking scheduling, staff changes, guys that were making strides in the fall, and a lot of other topics as well. And then this afternoon, we caught up.
Bubba, did I see something about the – I don't know. Maybe I saw this wrong. Did the UNC Greensboro game get moved to Chapel Hill?
Yes.
It was a three-game series with the Pirates in North Carolina. And, you know, very much like what happened back in 2018, where we played Friday night game in Greenville, Saturday in Durham at the DBAP, and then Sunday at Boschmer Stadium at UNC. So it was going to be similar to that, except the game was going to be at the Grasshoppers ballpark. They didn't think they were going to be ready, though. And as a result of that, two were going to be in Chapel Hill, one in Greenville. And then in 2023, two in Greenville, one in Chapel Hill. So Cliff addresses that in the interview. We honestly didn't ask him specifically about it, but he went ahead and talked about the dynamics of that series with UNC.
Yep.
And then also earlier this afternoon, we're going to include this as part of tonight's show, but we've run so long. Go check it out on our YouTube channel. We had about a 40-minute conversation with Boston College play-by-play voice John Mitoparel, and he's been there for at least 15 years or more, going back to the days when Jeff Jagodzinski was head coach in 07 and 08. He's at least been there that long.
He said 2005, Bubba.
Okay. I didn't catch that, but so he's been back there to the end of the Tom O'Brien era when he left to go to NC State. But excellent conversation with him, primarily focused on the bowl game, as you would expect, but also touched on his experience working the game for ESPN and the regional, and all those games in 2019. When the Pirates battled back out of the losers bracket to capture that Greenville Regional. And then he also shed some light on Winston Tabbs, who will hopefully see sooner rather than later in the purple and gold as he's seeking to come back off that knee injury.
And there may be a chance, guys, he misses the whole season. There's a chance of that too. So I hope that's not the case. But Pirates are playing very well, 8-2. In fact, if you want to hear – we did our overtime last night.
And James, I was going to ask Kyle to think about how he worded what he said to Dave as far as making arrangements and doing what he could to get Dave where he did not have to work.
I got you.
Did Kyle just say he'll get Dave off?
Well, James, don't get jealous. I guess I did. I guess I did say that. I'm going to take him to that Colorado school for minors.
Help me. I need help, Matt. I've lost control of the show. Help me, Matt. Bring it back to a gentleman's show and not like going to a gentleman's club.
Let's rein it in, fellas. Let's rein it back in.
All right, you're the voice of decency.
All right, now you can get Dave off then.
Wow, get that off that topic, please. Help me. Anyway, we've got a lot of great programming. Believe it or not, it's Sports Objective After Dark. So I guess it's okay. The censors, I don't think we're going to – the suits are telling me we won't get fired, which is great. The show will definitely go on. We're going to be a lot of exciting things, guys, coming up in 2022. We won't get into, but very excited about what's coming up next year.
I think we ought to get into it. I think we ought to just keep going and just see if we can make this podcast just drag out until about midnight.
You want to do that? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, no, let's not. So, guys, do you have any final things before we go?
Just looking forward to helping Dave get off, and go Pirates.
Well, Matt, do you have any one more thing?
Yeah, just always enjoy talking to Pete. He is a wealth of knowledge, amazing, and information. He's a great guest, and always enjoy talking to him. And man, I think we asked him about every type of restaurant, bar, crab cake. We got it all covered. So you guys did an awesome job with those questions, and he was able to answer every one of them.
Matt, you kiss my ass, man. I can tell the sarcasm in your voice there.
Hey, Kyle, I was right with you, brother. I was dying to know about the crab cake. So you covered it, man. Good job. Great job.
I can't tell if you're being serious or not that you were dying to know about the crab cake. See, Maryland's known for crab, Matt. I know you've gotten lots of crabs in Jersey over the years, but it's not quite the same as the crab in Maryland. But
you don't like those Jersey crabs?
I do not like those Jersey crabs.
Oh, my God.
Not a fan.
Oh, boy.
Bubba, help me, brother. Help me.
This show has a little bit of everything.
No doubt about it.
All right. In all honesty, as we get the hell out of here, Maryland and the Baltimore area is known for their crab cakes. That's what they're known for. Like, Eastern North Carolina is known for barbecue. So it's a good question. But I didn't take into account the time of year it is, and obviously you're not going to get fresh Maryland crab in December. So,
thank you, Bubba. Let's talk about the Military Bowl again. Get your tickets December 27th at 2:30. We're talking about the football game. Get your tickets 1-800-DIAL-ECU. Of course, anytime at ecupirates.com. 4,000 tickets sold through the school. Guys, we've got to get that number way, 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 way up. And
actually, that's pretty good, Dave. I think at this point, I think 4,000. I think we're at a pretty good pace.
Oh no, I know. I'm just saying I don't want it to stall out for sure.
And back in 2010, when we're in this game, we were somewhere as far as the tickets sold through ECU. We were somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000.
All right, there you go. So we got some work to do, but considering where we've been, man, that's a good start. We'll just keep it going. Guys, I've had a great time tonight. Pete Medhurst, play-by-play voice of the Navy Midshipman, and I think he's the future executive director of the Chamber of Commerce for Annapolis. I'm not sure about that, but
no doubt.
He's got
concierge.
He's got a crab cake podcast coming in his future.
Well, guys, it was I don't care what you say. That's a good question. I didn't even ask him. I found this one burger at a restaurant there that has crab dip on the burger. I mean, you know, how about that? Crab dip on a cheeseburger. Have you ever seen such a thing in your life?
No. No.
There you go. Crab dip on a cheeseburger.
All right. Well, hope you guys enjoyed the show.
Look, I'm a fat ass, all right? I'm fat, so I like food, all right? Two things I can guarantee you I like, food and women. I didn't ask him about the women up there.
I'm glad you didn't. All right. For all of the guys here and for Pete Medhurst.
We did ask about the crabs.
No doubt. I would get out of here before we get thrown off the air. As always, go Pirates.
Take care, fellas.